Welcome to the Every Movie Ever podcast. My name is Ben Groves.
And my name is Rob McFarlane. Welcome to the show, a movie podcast where we ask the important questions.
We do.
Like, if God is all-loving, but yet all-powerful, why does he let us suffer?
Also, are salamanders the coolest of the lizard semi-aquatic families?
No, they're not. No. The Illuminati, mate. The Illuminati are the coolest.
I don't know, man.
I know you. You were one of those gecko kids, weren't you? You had all the sparkly, sand-filled fabric geckos.
I don't know what any of that is. I know what
you
a gecko
know what
is.
They are. You know what they are. You used to buy them in like hippie shops and at Glastonbury. They'd be like little sand-filled geckos.
Glastonbury? I've driven through it once. Never been to the festival because I'm a poor, Rob. All right?
I've been to Glastonbury 5 times and I've not paid once. All right? You just got to work in the music industry for a very long time. All right? Anyone can get it, mate. All right? You just have to be incredibly smart and incredibly clever and incredibly handsome.
Well, speaking of anyone can get it, mate, this is the censored version of the show. Swears are going to be bleeped out, but fear not! As always, the full, uncensored version is available early on our Patreon for as little as £1.
As little as a pound. We priced it so Ben's mates in the Midlands could afford it, so technically anyone can.
If Ben can afford it. How you doing, buddy?
Yeah, I'm doing good. I had a weird night the other night where I woke up at like 2 and I was like, why can I not get back to sleep? And it took me until about 2:45 to realise it's because I needed to throw up.
Wow.
And so I did that for a while.
Gross.
And then I
you okay now?
It was literally just that one I just ruined my night's sleep. And then I had to call in to work and be like, oh, I can't come in. And they were like, well, you've got to take 48 hours out. And I've never been more upset to be told that I can't come into work because I'd totally forgotten that that was a rule.
Oh, food. Yeah, of course.
Food. Yeah. You can't prep food. Yeah. How about you, bud? How are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good. I'm super positive recently. Back in the gym thing, doing that like almost every day, feeling great for it. I am full to the gullet of supplements. So, that's fun.
I was saying before we started recording, I'm glad that we get to sit and talk about the gym because of the two options available.
Yeah.
You could be sat talking to us now about your time in the gym or your time at church.
You see what I'm saying? There's worse routes for me to go.
Right, exactly. Not saying that anyone who's part of the church is in a bad route.
It's definitely not.
Not for me. No. And I wouldn't want to hear about it for an hour.
I need to give a quick shout out as well, bud.
This better not be to a vicar.
Sorry, Father Randall. No, it's to Hannah. So this is like, I was working at the cinema the other day. Hannah walked in and was like, I love the podcast. I was like, holy shit, no way. This is crazy. Cool.
Right.
And then I also found out, Hannah's a Patreon.
Hey!
She subscribes to our Patreon. So this is a huge shout out to you. Thank you so much. I know that you're listening to this on the train to Birmingham on Monday because you told me that and I remembered stuff. See?
Ben, we're doxing people now. What are we doing today?
Today, buddy. Oh my God, I've waited to say this sentence for so long. You have no idea. Today, my darling little salamander boy, my juicy, juicy lizard man. Today, we're doing the final Fincher movie ever.
I gotta say,
ever.
I love this man, but he does exclusively incredibly depressing films.
Oh God, it's a trot.
And to do them back to back is a struggle.
It's a lot. It's a long
walk.
As part
of the pick and mix of films, always lovely. He's a lovely little palate cleanser between all the happy clappy stuff.
He's like a fried egg. You know what I mean? Some love it, some hate it, but me. Love the texture. It's one of them.
On a fry-up, but I wouldn't sit down to 12 fried eggs in a row, which
sweets,
is what we've done.
The sweets, we're talking about pick and mix, Rob. You know the little flappy fried eggs?
Yes.
Why would you put that on a fry-up?
You put eggs on a fry-up.
Not the sweets, you fucking animal.
You're missing out, mate.
No, I'm not. I'm just... No. That's genuinely upset me.
I'm just rolling with it because I did genuinely think you meant fried eggs for a moment because you're on your gym grind.
Oh, I do like eggs.
So I was like, we switched to protein and then I just thought I'd run with it.
I had a couple omelettes today. Delicious.
Well, we're doing The Killer.
The Killer!
David Fincher's most recent film came out in 2023. Now, 2023 was the year of warring tribes.
Yeah.
From Ukraine, Russia to Israel-Palestine. Everyone, and I mean everyone, was getting involved in horrific events from which the world will never recover.
Yeah.
Much like Michael Keaton choosing to appear in The Flash.
Gobsmacking.
Ruining 30 years of nostalgia.
Unbelievable.
We'd all just unlocked from our down and David Fincher unleashed his latest movie, The Killer, onto Netflix. But today, we're answering all the hard questions.
Is Fincher A warlock.
That wasn't what I had in mind, but okay.
He might be. Why Fassbender's face so twitchy?
Wasn't thinking that either, but also, and most importantly, what the hell is this film about? Because it sure as shit isn't about the killer.
You see what I mean? I've got so much on this, mate. I've got so much on this. I'm bursting at the tits, ready to talk about this. My nips are primed.
Less of that, less of that.
Right, so should we get into the breakdown?
What, the breakdown that you've written for me to read out that I've not seen? Definitely isn't going to be controversial.
I'm pretty sure you've written this one. And we've had wars recently, so I've gone light with this one, mate. I've gone light with it. Enjoy.
I think we needed to, because
it was getting vicious. It was getting silly. Yeah, sooner or later,
okay,
one of us would have said something worse.
For those of you that haven't seen this film and aren't planning to, or those who need a quick refresher to know what we're talking about later in the episode, The Killer is about a methodical and disciplined assassin played by Michael Fassbender as he prepares for a high-profile hit in Paris. He follows a strict code: patience, precision, and emotional detachment. However, despite his meticulous preparation, he misses his shot, hitting an unintended target.
Oh, no.
Realizing this mistake will have consequences, he flees, knowing that his employers will not tolerate failure. Mm. Neither will I, Rob McFarlane. I will touch 16 salamanders by the first Saturday in May.
All right,
Ben,
there's
been a bit of a salamander.
That's specific, man. That's all right. I'm with you, though.
Where's
you know
the
what I mean?
Salamanders thing coming from? Is this your new autistic hyperfocus?
No, this is what I'm saying. I support you through it. This is what I'm saying. You want to touch them salamanders? Let's get you some salamanders. You know what I mean?
I don't know if that's... Do you mean the animal?
Let's just move
Returning to his safe house in the Dominican Republic, he discovers that his girlfriend, Magdala, has been attacked as retaliation.
Oh, no.
Seeking revenge, he embarks on a calculated journey to eliminate everyone responsible for the attack.
Yeah.
His handler, Hodges.
Dead.
Hired assassins, the brute, and the expert.
Dead.
Others involved.
Dead.
Each encounter is cold, precise, and methodical, reinforcing his detached approach to violence.
Yeah.
He's clumsy as f*** with it all and relies on Jeff Bezos a bunch, but still, slick. Like a salamander on the... First Saturday in May.
It's specific, man. This is specific.
I feel like it's a private joke that I'm not part of.
I feel like
on our show.
I feel like not... the first Saturday of May in Salamanders has some sort of link that we're just not. Maybe the next paragraph will sort it out for us. Let's continue.
The assassin finally reaches the man behind the attack, billionaire Claiborne, who sanctioned the hit due to the botched job in Paris. However, instead of killing him, the assassin makes a calculated decision to spare him, warning him to not interfere again. He then retreats to the Dominican Republic, seemingly ready to leave the cycle of violence behind and embrace a quieter existence, though his fate remains ambiguous.
Yeah.
I personally, however, believe that the assassin here feels much like a salamander on the first Saturday of May.
Okay, what was that?
One of the many.
Ooh, okay.
First Saturday. Odd. I'm Googling it now. Is this some sort of bet where you've...
No, this is just, I really like salamanders and I found out that National Salamander Day is the first Saturday of every
right,
May.
Right, okay, so when I said, is this your new autistic hyperfocus, and you said no, what you meant to say was,
yes, I'm
really getting into salamanders.
Yeah.
I like buying those fabric ones filled with sand. Brilliant.
No, it's not that. I watched Matilda recently and there's like there's salamander focus in that and then I was like, oh, salamanders are pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah, shit film, never seen it. What's The Killer about, Ben?
Oh, you know what, mate? I might make that next week's film because she is objectively the best superhero and I will fight you till the death.
Oh, that's fascinating. But what's The Killer about, Ben?
All right, so this film's odd, man.
It is.
I watched it when it came out and I was like, okay, it's fine. It's, you know, it's a fine film.
Yep.
It's entertaining enough. It's very sort of contradictive in parts.
It's also
very sort of unreliably narrated by the killer himself.
I see.
Which I always love in a film.
To a degree it is.
Yeah.
I trust the film though. I trust the message.
Same.
I came away with.
Same. I also do. I came away with an interpretation of this film that I feel like applies to the whole of our David Fincher series. And I agree.
I
tied it into everything that we've learned so far, all of the movies of his that we've watched to this point, the lessons that we've come away with. I've molded it all into one ball and I have an idea that this is Fincher reflecting on his own career and where he's at right now.
I love that, but you're wrong. And I'm going to set out to prove that this is the most unrelated to Fincher's prior catalogue of a lot of his films.
I got a question for you.
Yeah.
What if we're both right?
Ooh.
What if this is written in a way that means whatever interpretation you want to give it, it completely works because of how well it is written?
I hear your argument, but what that would mean is that movies, and not just movies, but art as a whole, is subjective.
Yeah.
Is subjective.
Yeah.
And that there isn't an objectively right answer. And that kind of goes against the spirit of the internet.
No, I agree. I agree.
I think we have to be able to say definitively what's right or wrong.
Yeah.
And call all other people not true film fans if they have a different view.
Okay. I'm with you on this. And I'm also down for it. Because, I mean, what's the internet really given us? In the long term of things, what's it given us? Two Girls, One Cup? Fantastic. Jar Squatter? Incredible.
Brilliant.
Meatspinner.com? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Forgotten that one.
Ban. Got kicked out of IT countless times because people were like, go on, Meatspinner. You know what I mean?
No. I hear your point. I think it's right that we've come away with the different things from this film. I think the film kind of invites it because the film doesn't really put anything of its own that strongly forward.
Yeah.
It was written originally by Alexis Nolent, illustrated by Luc Jacquemont. It's a graphic novel David Fincher has had like a love for.
Okay.
For, guess, 20 years, because every single project David Fincher makes he has to sit on for 20 years first.
Yeah.
I got a great quote here from Andrew Kevin Walker, who wrote Seven and was script doctor on a whole bunch of Fincher projects. This script, this screenplay is written by him.
Okay.
Explains Walker, Fincher talked to me around 2008 and he laid out like a 5-chapter story with very specific elements and I scribbled it all down in a notebook. And then 10 years went by and nothing really happened. So 10 years later, he tells me the same story off the top of his head and I go dig in my papers and I'm like, it's exactly the same as what he said in 2008.
I love Fincher so much.
He loved the idea that, you know, in the graphic novel, there's not much in the way of interaction with people. So they tried to keep the dialogue really minimal.
Yeah.
And he said, I took it seriously. I tried to keep it to 10 lines. And when I finished, it was 13. I thought, Baker's Dozen, close enough.
Fair enough. That's enough. You know what I mean?
I think that scarcity of dialogue leaves a lot open to be interpreted about this film. It's a little bit like a sort of magic mirror where you look at it and the only thing you see is what you brought yourself.
I love this. I love this so much because what I saw in this film, in my magic mirror, is Fincher's the killer.
Oh, okay.
And I've broken this down. It took me ages to break this down. It took me 5 watch throughs of this film, 2 hours apiece, not being able to sleep, typing away like a pervert on a Tuesday. You know what I mean?
That's too many times to watch this film.
Yeah, it is. I'm not going to argue with you on that. That's too many. But also, got into it. You know what I mean?
Okay. Fair.
Much like a salamander, I was hyper focused on my goal. Needed to get to that riverbed.
You need to.
You know what I mean?
I'm not here for salamanders, bud. I'm not here for them.
Oh, what you said in the breakdown, buddy. Right.
But I can very easily touch a salamander 13 times before. Sorry, 16 times.
Thank you.
Before the first Saturday in May. Because I've got one at work. So.
What do you mean you've got one at work? What does that mean?
There's a type of grill called a salamander. I touch it multiple
times. Is
that
a fucking chef joke? You just drop a chef joke?
Yeah.
Oh, mate.
It's not my fault that you don't cook.
Finch is the killer. All right. I'm getting us back on track because that was disgusting. Finch is the killer. That was such low hanging fruit.
All right, but when salamanders aren't. They literally live.
National Salamander Day is an underappreciated holiday. Fuck you.
Do you know what? I agree. It's a holiday no one has heard
exactly.
of.
Exactly. I'm trying to raise awareness.
And it's exactly appreciated exactly as much as it should be.
But now, you wait until my work here is done. You know what I mean? There'll be salamander fans out there that aren't aware.
So you're... Wait. You're saying David Fincher is the killer. Let me get us back
on track.
Fincher's
the killer.
Here,
right? You derailed me. Fincher's the killer, right? So, in my little wormhole that I've been living in for a while.
Don't like that, but okay.
The killer is the director, the filmmaker. So this is all an analogy of the movie business.
Right.
And the different roles played in it and how Fincher has had these interactions and these experiences with said roles, right? So,
okay.
The killer is the director or the filmmaker. So the assassin represents a meticulous filmmaker, much like Fincher himself. He's precise, he's calculated, and obsessed with control.
Mm-hmm.
Finch is known to be a perfectionist. He's known for those weird tendencies where he takes 1,000 takes. You know what I mean? He has to get the perfect shot, which we have talked about in every other episode that we've done. Because
yes, we have.
Some of the amount of takes that he's done for his past films are gobsmacking.
Yeah, yeah. 200 for Amanda Seyfried, who didn't even have a speaking line in that shot.
This is what I'm saying. Insane amount, right? The killer follows strict method. He avoids improvisation. You know, just like the quote, stick to your plan. Anticipate. Uh-huh, yeah. Don't improvise. Trust no one. Never yield an advantage. Fight only the battle you're paid to win. Now,
that could be out of Fincher's own mouth.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. So the battles that he had with Alien 3, that's all there. That's perfect. However, his carefully planned film, The Assassination, doesn't land as intended. It misses the target, right?
Yes, it does. Yes.
This failure mirrors a filmmaker who, despite all of his expertise, all of the prep, all of the tiny, minute details controlled to a ridiculous degree.
Yeah.
He releases his film and it does not resonate with audiences or the critics, which he has had countless experiences with. Look at Fight Club.
Yeah, so are we... Okay, yeah, or Mank.
Or Mank.
Or,
you see what I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. All right.
I see. I'm following with you so far.
So there's the filmmaker, the director. Now we move on to Hodges.
Who is?
Hodges is the assassin's handler, right?
Yes.
So Hodges, the killer's handler, this is the studio executive or the producer.
Right.
So the killer's handler, Hodges, acts as the studio head or the producer. He bankrolls the operation, connects the assassin with the job, and ensures it gets executed efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
But when the killer fails, Hodges sees him as a liability, like how studios lose faith in directors who deliver box office bombs. So when Fincher delivers a film, it flops. He's immediately sort of like ostracized to a degree. No, you don't get as big a budget. No, you don't get trusted with the big scripts. You're going to have to prove yourself again. You know what I mean? The moment the killer jeopardizes the business, Hodges tries to cut his ties, protect his own interests, just as studios often abandon directors after a flop. So there's your executive and there's your producer, right?
Yep.
Now.
Okay, I hear you.
We move on to The Brute and The Expert.
Are these rival directors? Are we saying The Brute is Michael Bay and The Expert is Steven Spielberg?
We can say that The Expert is Spielberg. We can say that.
Right.
But I'm going to say that The Brute is critics, industry critics.
Oh, okay.
These two assassins, they symbolize critics and industry peers. So it could be Spielberg. It could be other big directors, you know?
Okay.
The Brute represents a brute force critic, one who attacks ridiculously harsh, right? He's aiming to dismantle the killer's career, like how harsh critics can bury a film's reputation in one review. They can turn a million people off a film, right? They can massively affect the outcome.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
The Expert, however, is more refined. She's experienced counterpart.
Understands, yeah.
Much like an auteur filmmaker or an industry insider.
Right.
So she acknowledges the assassin's skill.
Mm-hmm.
She recognizes his professionalism.
Yep.
But she also understands the reality. In this business, one mistake can cost you everything. And a final acceptance of a fate mirrors how some directors gracefully bow out when they recognize the industry's ruthless nature and then go off to do indie movies for the rest of their career that fly under the radar and just serve themselves.
Okay. This is Ben.
Mm-hmm.
Quite fully fleshed out.
I'm cooking at the minute. I'm cooking at the minute. Stick with me though. Because I'm not going to lie, it gets a little flimsy. But then I bring it back in. You know what I mean?
This is the strong evidence.
I started strong.
Right.
Now I'm about to get a little flimsy.
You could just leave it there and not weaken your case, but you're going to go for it.
I'm going to go for it. If there's one thing that I'm known for, it's ruining a good hand. All right. So I'm going to hit on 20.
Yeah.
All right, you ready? Magdala.
Right, his missus.
His girlfriend, his missus who gets the absolute shit beat out of her.
Yeah.
I think that could be the passion of filmmaking.
Right.
I told you it gets flimsy. One sec. Let me bridge this gap.
Okay.
So the killer's girlfriend, Magdala, brutally attacked in retaliation for his failure.
Yeah.
This could symbolize how a filmmaker's personal love for the craft suffers when one of his film fails.
I'd see the personal love aspect. Okay,
there we go.
There is a parallel there. Who he personally loves is Magdala.
Yeah. So now, instead of running away and doing all the projects that you want to do, passion projects get shelved, reputations are tarnished, and the joy of creating stripped away. The killer's revenge mission is his attempt to reclaim what was taken from him, just as a director who has faced failure often fights to regain creative control and his credibility.
Okay.
I'm getting there. See, it starts flimsy. I'm bringing it back around now.
But it brings back. Okay.
I'm bringing it back around. Okay. So Claiborne, who is the billionaire who ordered the hit.
Yeah.
The modern audience. It's the box office market. He's us, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, the consumer. I'll agree with you on that.
The wealthy person.
Hard agree on that. I may also have that in my analogy.
I fucking love us sometimes, bud. There's sometimes, even if you're out diddling salamanders, I still fucking love you, boy. All right? My beautiful baby.
Okay, don't worry. The next quote angel. I've got, you now deserve with that salamander thing. It's all good.
Claiborne he's the wealthy businessman who ordered the hit. He represents the broader audience and the financial pressures of the industry, right?
Mm-hmm.
So just like moviegoers and investors who ultimately determine whether a film's a hit or a miss, he holds the ultimate power over the assassin's career. However, when confronted, he is completely indifferent. He barely acknowledges the assassin's presence, much like how modern audiences move on ridiculously quickly from films. Little regard for any of the effort that anyone is putting into them.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of seeking revenge, the killer chooses to walk away. Mirroring how some filmmakers choose to retreat from mainstream Hollywood rather than endlessly chase audience approval. Dude, the amount of times that I speak to people and I'm like, oh, hey, have you seen any film? Name any film. Have you seen it? And they're like, yeah, it was a bag of shit. And I'm like, cool. Who directed it? Have you seen his other films? Oh, yeah, sound. Who wrote it? Have you seen their other project? No? Oh, it's mad, that, isn't it? No one cares. No one cares. We don't care.
No, of course not.
We're in such an instant gratification mindset right now that it's just boom, 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 out of our mind forever.
Okay. Some of your stuff is overlapping with my stuff.
I like this.
In terms of what it means, but how much more have you got? Because I'm about to end your whole career.
We'll see, buddy. In my analogy, the killer becomes a metaphor for the unforgiving nature of the film industry, right?
Uh-huh.
Directors, doesn't matter how good they are, doesn't matter how skilled they are, they're always at the mercy of the studios, the critics, and us.
The audiences, the box office and takings, us.
One failure, derail your entire career, and survival depends on adapting to an industry that rarely forgives you. The killer's ultimate decision to walk away suggests a filmmaker disillusioned by the system, choosing creative freedom over the constant battle for commercial success. It's almost as if Fincher is looking at his own career and going, I have tried tooth and nail with my meticulous filmmaking style, my 500 takes for most movies.
Right.
I've chased acceptance with films like Mank.
Uh-huh.
Fight Club flopped initially and was like bombed by the critics.
Only took up on DVD sales.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The killer could be Fincher looking at it and going, I'm done with chasing that nonsense. Netflix have given me a big old bucket of money and a 10 movie deal. I'm just going to do what I want with it.
I think that, but just a quick retraction, I don't think it's 10 movies. I've tried to find my source on that and I can't. I think it might have been that he's already done 10 movies and he's got a 3-year deal. I need to check.
If he's got a 3-year deal, it's one third of a movie deal, because Fincher's not going to get any movies out in 3 years. It's one and done.
I hear your analogy and I think it's a good read of the film. I think everything that you've pulled from is there.
Thank you.
Do you know the website ringer.com?
Ringer.
So it's a sort of popular culture. It's like Medium, you know. But for movies, and I'm going to quote Adam Neyman, who wrote for ringer.com. He's a critic. In your analogy, he'd be a brute.
Yeah.
Like you said, like a brute can dismantle your career. And this is a direct quote. If Fassbender is Fincher, does that mean that the botched assignment that puts a target on his back is literally supposed to be Mank? Say that out loud and it sounds desperately silly, like a crackpot theory from one of the commentators in Room 237. Or some top-of-the-head nonsense from a mullet-wearing podcaster in Telford who should stick to being the comedy sidekick. I made that last bit up.
Still hurt just as much. Still hurt just as much. That's fine.
No, so I was looking at the things that it could be. I think you're right. I do think you're right. I think Adam Neyman is being internet-y about it.
Thank you.
And saying that there's only one way to look at stuff.
Yeah.
The way I would change your read on this film, or offer you a delicious egg in these trying times of a wider perspective.
Okay.
Right? I don't think it's about the film industry, and I don't think the killer is Fincher. I think it's a bit broader than that.
Okay.
Because it's not Fincher's script. Fincher doesn't write. You know, he saw the graphic novel. Mm-hmm. He loves the graphic novel. Yeah. There's stuff in the source material is very much more a cut and dried. He's a killer. he messes up a job and it's how he fixes it, right? And it's a smaller story.
Yeah.
I think what happens is David Fincher knows that when he puts his name on something, there's going to have to be a bit more than that. You can't just go, here's a film, right? Because people are like, but you're David Fincher. You're one of the greatest minds of all time. Sure. But what he does is goes, yeah, but I'm a technician. I'll give me a brilliant script mm-hmm. and I'll make it look brilliant, but I'm not going to get in there and start writing. I've got Andrew Kevin Walker for that. And that's what he got Andrew Kevin Walker to do. There's a whole bunch of stuff in the start of this movie. It is a huge amount of time where there's not a word spoken. It's all this sort of...
unreliable narration.
Like, unreliable narration of like snappy sound bites yeah. that's not particularly well informed. No. There's a bit where the killer says, do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law, said someone. And it's a very famous Aleister Crowley quote,
okay.
who was an 18th century occultist and was into all sorts of
weird
shit.
Love this dude.
Shit.
This is the sex magic dude, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was a teenage phase. The guy's a knobhead. But it feels like if you're going to quote someone, you should remember who you're quoting.
Yeah.
So there's a huge like front on this guy. He thinks he's got everything figured out. And everything's like a snappy soundbite about man's nature. Mm-hmm. And he comes across as everything that those bro productivity fetishist podcasts are.
Yes.
Oh, by 5 a.m., you've got to be up. You've got to have founded three businesses. Then what I do is I have 200 calories. That's my first breakfast. Then an hour later, I have another 200 calories. That's my second breakfast. By midday, I've had 9 breakfasts.
I wake up at 4 in the morning, and by 5 in the morning, I've done 3 hours of yoga. Do you know what I mean?
Right. And it's this complete like fetishism and idolatry of productivity and process and lack of empathy. Half the stuff out of his mouth would sound as at home in the mouth of a hedge fund manager mm-hmm. as it would like a guard at Auschwitz closing the chamber door.
Wow. It's mad to me that you know what an Auschwitz guard would sound like. You know what I mean?
As one would imagine, Ben, that's, all right?
This goes to show that we really do move in different circles.
My point is, the film is like it's Brazil or it's office space.
Okay.
Through David Fincher's very dry, very darkly funny lens.
Ooh. That's a really good take.
But it's whereas Fight Club was, look at this thing, isn't it awful? Let's fight against it. Mm. This is there's no fighting, there's no winning. Because this film is I mean, the dude is sleep deprived.
Yeah.
Complaining about overtime to his boss.
Yeah.
Constantly interrupted by notifications on his smartwatch.
Yeah.
And is reminiscing about times when he didn't find his job so boring. He's literally got a high-powered sniper rifle aimed through a window. He's like, oh, this is dumb.
I'm sitting next to a space heater. I've done 3 hours of yoga in 20 minutes this morning. I should be exhilarated.
Right, so it's this.
Yeah.
And the whole system he's in as a hired killer
yeah.
is one of professional apathy. The secretary in the organization, when he kidnaps her to get the files, she's there going, oh, I'm not a bad person.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
I'm not a bad person. It's this sense of, we're all living in this system mm-hmm. where we have jobs and we have to go to those jobs because that's the system we're in. And we all have to buy stuff. We all want stuff and we all get that stuff.
Mm.
And we kind of just don't look at the people that get hurt along the way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then along the way, people offer us, you know, when he goes to the bank and he sorts out he gets all of his funds withdrawn.
Yeah.
And she's there going, oh, our managers would be really happy to offer you our select investment opportunities. He then picks up his burner phone from an Amazon Bezos box,
yeah.
which, by the way, is like one of the many bits of product placement in this, because it's essentially showing how corporations just enable everything.
Yeah.
They make everything easy. And it's the ease that I think this film pins itself around.
It talks about McDonald's as well. The only thing that we see him eat is a yeah. fucking McDonald's. He's in a fancy-ass right. restaurant at one point and turns down the food from like a Michelin star chef.
Yeah.
Because he had a burger on the way in. Do you know what I mean? It's like,
yeah.
what?
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Okay.
And then he meets the final client.
Yeah.
And does he get the revenge that he's been fighting for this whole time? No, he doesn't. Because as he says earlier in the film, the richer they are, the more difficult it is to cover your tracks.
Yeah.
So because it's too difficult and too inconvenient to get the justice he needs, he just lets it slide. Because as the client says, it was just business.
Ooh.
He realizes that the guy at the top is just a consumer like him. And we get the final scene where the killer lounges on his sunbed And he hasn't killed the masters, he hasn't eaten the rich, and he hasn't smashed the system because it's easier to do nothing.
I really like this.
It's easier for him, it's easier for us. We know Amazon's bad.
Yeah.
We know people are pissing in bottles. Do we do something about it? No, it's a bit of a ball ache. Everything is f***ed, and it's because we like it that way, is the message of this film.
Okay, that's a great take on it. There's so much stuff to dig into with this film. There was, on my first ever, my first watch through this film, when he meets Claiborne, like the billionaire at the end, Claiborne doesn't even know who he is. He's like,
no,
bud, I've got no concept of who you even are. Like, no right. concept whatsoever. And the fact that that destroyed him to the point of, oh my God, I thought I was the most important person in the world. Yeah. I thought everyone would be watching their back because I am the best. And this guy was like, you are a tiny cog next to another tiny cog in an enormous machine.
The whole conceit is this: the worst thing that's happened to you in your life was as a result of a polite conversation that I didn't really know how to handle, where they said, do you want an insurance policy to prevent blowback? And I didn't really know what that meant. I didn't really care, so I just went,
yeah, fuck it.
And it was the worst thing that ever happened to your loved one.
Yeah, it was 150 grand for me, and I didn't even notice it leave the bank. It was just in escrow.
Right.
Then I didn't ever think about you ever again. That was it. It was done.
Right.
But to you,
so it's about
you've flown to every continent on the planet, chasing people down, getting your vengeance. That's a brutal take.
And so I think where you're right is that Fincher's world fits because Fincher's world is part of everyone's world. Mm-hmm. He has a job, he has a task that needs to get done, and his wellness and his livelihood is based on his ability to do it correctly. And if life happens and something goes wrong, you can be shut out of that.
Yeah, of course.
Because that's the system we've chosen to arrange ourselves into.
Bro, this film works for every job.
Yeah, it's that. It's job culture. He does the first hit from a WeWork, which is a rentable office space.
Yeah. Yeah, we work being...
The analogy is 100% there.
We work being a big corporation in, you know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, and it's where you rent hot desk space to do your side hustle, to do your get on the grind, to do your get up at 5 a.m.
Yeah.
Empathy is the killer.
Yeah.
And then the all of his quotes about, like, you know, I don't make a noticeable difference in the numbers of deaths. Which is this film is essentially the David Fincher Zone of Interest, but watchable.
Zone of Interest by Fincher.
Right.
I mean, I don't know if I can go that far. It's a fucking bold claim, but
I think it's making the same point.
Sure.
We're all complicit in this.
Yeah.
We all at the end of everything we do, there is someone at gunpoint, and we just choose to not look at it because we like our stuff arriving the next day.
But I'll agree with you wholeheartedly. I think we're both right, and I think this film was written in a way that whatever you take away from it is exactly correct. And I love this with films, because not only... This is why I love cinema, right? You can go and sit in a dark room full of strangers, and you're all there for one reason and one reason only,
right?
To watch the film, right? And you all come away from that experience with an opinion, with a memory.
Mm-hmm.
You've just lived an event, right?
Uh-huh, 100%.
And you can have these discussions with people where every single person has a wildly different opinion, different views, different experiences that all apply to the exact same thing that you've just watched. It's such an interesting thing to be able to view different walks of life through the same Fincher Fassbender movie about him. A, he was trying to shoot someone in the face whilst he was getting a lap dance from someone in underwear. Dude, just let him live a little. Do you know what I mean? Give him 20. Have a heart. Give him 20. I know no empathy and all that bullshit, but fucking hell, come on, buddy. There's kicking a man when he's down, but then there's kicking a man when he's up. You know what I mean?
Right, just let him. Right. I mean, the blood loss would have been better if he'd shot a little.
That's
lower,
what I mean. Just let. Jesus had a last meal, is what I'm saying.
Right.
Just let him cook for like 20 minutes. Like, that's it.
I think my one bit of evidence, besides Adam Neyman writing for Ringer.com, who says you're an idiot,
is love that guy.
What's supported in the text is, and I don't think comes across if you don't get Fincher's sense of humor, which Fincher's sense of humor is incredibly dry and incredibly dark.
Yeah.
So the jokes in this, where, like, he will say his statement and then something will just go immediately go wrong afterwards.
Yeah, because he fumbles everything.
Right. Or when he kills a man by shoving a table leg up his ass.
Don't.
And then he then bleeds out incredibly slowly.
The squelching of that man's gooch as he walks from his kitchen to his bathroom is the most unsettling thing. I've got a thing about the audio and it's fucking disgusting. Mm-hmm.
Ren Kleiss, man. Ren Kleiss smashes it every time.
Don't. It's the audio in this film is unreal.
Right.
Ken Kleiss.
And I think the Kleiss, comedy right? of the film, Ren Kleiss. Ren Kleiss.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
R-E-N Kleiss. It should be Ken Kleiss.
Yeah.
But it's
okay.
Not.
All right. Ren Kleiss.
Ren Kleiss, so, yeah. He does an amazing job on the audio.
But when him and Fincher sat down to do the audio on this film, they were like, let's go against all the norms and make it as unsettling as possible.
Yeah.
And the thing that bothered me to begin with is I text you straight away.
Mm-hmm.
My first watch show, I watched it through TV, loudspeakers, whatever. He puts one headphone in, starts listening to the Smiths. I didn't notice it on my very first watch, but when researching for the show, it only comes out of the right speaker when he's got his one headphone in, and I hated it because I was like, it's so unsettling. And then I thought, what about if I watch it with headphones on? Are they going to like cut it a little bit more? Huge mistake. Huge mistake, buddy, because every tiny bit of audio in this is, it changes on where the camera is and on where the killer is, because it's all perceptive audio. The entire film is perceptive audio. And Skinamarink has had like huge praise for this. You watch it with headphones on, it's terrifying. Mm-hmm. Watch it through TV, it's pointless. There's no point watching it. It's boring. Headphones on, insane.
Right.
This film's the same, just different genre. You put your headphones on and dude, the audio, like if the killer's behind a closed door, but we're seeing him from a busy street, when the door opens slightly, the noise will get unmuffled and there is weird high-pitched ringing when the killer is suddenly in a stressful situation.
Mm-hmm.
When there's a development that would cause him stress, you get a ringing in your ears and it's at a pitch that is like teeth vibrating kind of pitch.
But I think your point about, you know, Skinamarink does this and everyone applauded and Fincher does it and everyone yawns.
Yeah.
Is that there? I think it's the great unfairness of art is that somebody does something incredible.
Yeah.
And then they go, wow, you've really raised the bar now.
Mm.
And they're like, great, I'm just going to do that again. They're like, no. You have to raise it again by more than you did last time. And it's like...
It's Arcade Fire Syndrome.
No, can I not just
That's what it is, Arcade Fire Syndrome. You release an album that good to begin with, you are f***ed for the rest of your career, mate. It's just not happening.
You see, we disagree on Arcade Fire, but I get you.
Neon Bible.
No, Neon Bible's not a good album, but The Suburbs is.
Suburbs, great, but that's three albums deep.
Yeah.
Oh, what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
I get your point. You set a bar too high. Yeah. I think Fincher is, in all ways, the director's director.
Yeah.
He is a technician.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really... I don't think Fincher really even cares about what we would consider the things we remember about a film.
No.
I don't think David Fincher watches films like us.
Mm-hmm.
He's looking at shots, he's looking at lighting, he's looking at composition, he's looking at transitions.
Yeah.
And then the words people are saying, I think on his ninth watch through, he might go, oh, there's a plot.
Yeah, the story. Seen that one before, mate. Where's your lighting? Where's your Dutch angles?
Exactly.
What are we doing here?
Exactly. And so he's operating at this kind of level. And I think unfairly as an audience, everybody watches this film and they go, yeah, it's fine. I did the same thing. If David Fincher hadn't existed before and this film came out, with all that audio stuff, with the way the camera follows
the
fight scene with the brute, like you just go, oh, wow, what an incredible debut.
I'd be floored. I'd be on my ass for about a week.
Right, exactly. But when Fincher does it, it's like, it's not. And then they name some lightning in a bottle that like had nothing to do with what Fincher did. It had everything to do with when Fincher did and the way the chips fell.
Exactly.
And it's a little bit like saying this guy is the top level poker player in the world.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to win every hand.
But he should. You know what I mean?
But that's what you get the sense
from my poker players.
Right. I want a poker player that wins every game. And you're like,
yeah,
that's not, then it wouldn't be a game, would it? There'd be no interest. There'd be no need to turn up because you'd know they'd smashed
it. Yeah, but I want to see how they smashed it. This is sports. You just explained the sports to me. And as we all know, I'm a very sporty person. Go team. Go ball. You know what I mean?
The reason I like Fincher and the reason I don't think he is the killer is that, yes, I think if this film was written about who David Fincher was 20 years ago, then the Michael Fassbender character has a lot of similarities and a lot of parallels.
Yeah.
But everybody that works with Fincher now, okay, yeah, there's the takes. But there's a lad called Patrick Fugit. It's that or fug it, and I'm going to be kind and say fug it.
I say we go fug it. You know what I mean? Fug it. Let's do fug it.
He starred in Almost Famous.
Okay.
And he later portrayed Officer in Gone Girl, the one he doesn't like, Nick Dunn.
I love that guy.
He's brilliant. He said Gone Girl was one of the funniest sets he'd ever been on. In between takes, Fincher would always have some dry joke to crack.
I love this.
It kept the mood jovial since they... And then another actor said of the Social Network, I had more fun in those scenes than I'd probably have riding my jet ski around Barbados. And when you watch behind-the-scenes stuff...
The Social Network?
Yeah. And as proof of how hilarious this man is, right? I've got a direct quote.
Okay.
And if you've got a very dry, very dark sense of humour, this is one of the funniest things I've read all week.
Go on.
David Fincher says, part of my testiness is that I feel I make 50 compromises a day. When people come to me and say, why can't you compromise? I'm like, what are you talking about? The sheer fact that you and I are talking right now means that I've compromised.
Oh, what a shit house. I fucking love this guy. The more I learn about him, the more I love him. Like, this whole series has been an absolute trog to get to the end of, right? Because his films are incredibly heavy, incredibly dense.
And dark.
A lot of dark stuff going on. Every tiny aspect is so meticulously thought out. Trying to pull it apart is like riddle. And it's like, when it comes to talking about it, we've got an hour. What are you going to say?
Yeah.
That hasn't been said a thousand times by the gym bros on YouTube. Do you know what I mean? It's like, what are we doing? But when you give me snippets like this, where he is an absolute shithouse, just for the sake of being an absolute shithouse, I love him. I love him wholeheartedly.
Now, Ben, I know that you're a big fan of Conjecture Corner.
I love it.
And I feel like I've been letting my contributions to Conjecture Corner slip.
You have.
So I've got a question for you. The final shot of this film.
Yes.
He's not killed the client. He's gone back to the Dominican Republic.
Yes.
He's chilling on the beach with Magdala.
Yeah.
Drinks his coffee. And then he sits down and he talks about, you just got to relax, you know.
Yeah.
You're not one of the few. Maybe, like me, you're one of the many.
Yeah.
And then just before the credits, he puts the sunglasses on, he lies back, he relaxes. And then his face twitches.
Yeah, he does a weird little eye thing.
Yeah. Now, Michael Fassbender, for the majority of this film, doesn't let himself blink. There's no blinking in this film.
Not notice this. This is another watch
tiny
through. Can wait until happen.
Michael Fassbender's face is the most static, autistic thing that I've seen in decades. And then at the end of the film, he does that twitch. Now, you know David Fincher's not letting that
I know.
Shot
yeah,
in.
I know.
So what does the twitch
mean? I've got the answer to this. Categorically, objectively, I know I'm right.
Okay.
All he's doing is he's lying on his lounger, right? He's like, my beat-up missus is out of hospital. I've got a bit of revenge. I'm doing all right. That billionaire didn't know who I was. I'm one of the many. I'm not one of the few. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not that important. And just at that moment, he remembers that time that a table leg went into a man's gooch and the noise it made as that man walked from his kitchen to the bathroom whilst chasing him with an open gooch. And then he was like, oh, that was the twitch. It was an involuntary gooch twitch on Fassbender's.
Okay, so there's four theories. One is your gooch theory.
The correct theory. Yep, continue.
We'll put that up as... Right,
give me the three wrong ones.
Well, you say that. Lots of people are saying that the twitch is a sign of relaxation, that he's kind of letting his face become more human. He's had this robot face, and then the twitch is a little human affectation that's letting him... showing that he's kind of relaxing into being more of a human person.
Have we had this conversation before?
No.
In a previous episode about something else, because I've the most deja vu I've ever had in my entire life right now.
Glitch in the Matrix, bro. Others say that the twitch is a nervous tick caused by anxiety and uncertainty about his safety and leaving the capitalist system.
Yeah.
And bear with me, Ben, because you'd need to have seen this film to get this next question. Or is it a deadly speck of radioactive material beginning to cause facial necrosis from the coffee he's just had?
Rob, I have the most amount of deja vu right now. I have the most amount of deja vu right now. This is ridiculous. Have we had this conversation before?
No,
because I feel mental.
Yeah, no, this is the first time. This is because you've had nine kilos of creatine in the last 40 minutes.
It was 5,000 milligrams.
Right, that's too much, Ben.
No, it's not.
I think you've unlocked the fact that creatine allows you to see the future.
I might have seen the future because the three wrong theories that you've just given me,
I fucking swear to God we've had this conversation, Rob, because the radioactive fleck is a great theory. Mm-hmm. It's super, super sinister, or
it is.
It's super suicidal now that he's realised that he's one of the many and not one of the few, and he's realising...
Mm. No, you see, I think it's the expert when she orders her bottle at the restaurant and she says, bring me my bottle.
Yeah, you can leave the bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah.
My bottle of deadly radioactive whiskey.
And he only
whiskey.
Drinks from the last glass on the thing out of her bottle. Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Rob, we've had this conversation before. This is doing my tits in. Yeah, okay.
Sorry,
that's
mate,
a great theory. That is a great theory. I also really like the Gooch theory.
Yeah. I think for the sake of getting you out of your creatine-induced
this
time
isn't
spin,
it.
We're going to go with the Gooch theory.
Radio.
I don't agree with it, but I'm trying to rescue...
Which one do you think is the most plausible?
I don't think it's the radioactive material one.
Yeah.
Although it's an interesting thought experiment, it doesn't add anything to the story of the subtext of the film.
Yeah.
If this is just a film about a killer,
yeah,
then it's a great twist ending, but it's the most subtly placed one that only 0.5% of the audience are going to get.
Yeah.
So the majority of your audience are just going to see a plain, straight-up noir film, and then some of them will go, oh, that last nanosecond was quite clever.
Mm.
Unless it's about something greater, which I think we can all agree, categorically and objectively it is,
mm-hmm.
Because this is the internet and we've decided that this is the hill we're dying on.
Yeah.
It's either about Finch's career and his meticulousness in the studio system or capitalism as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just a straight telling of events. And there's nothing that it adds to the subtext whatsoever. If he's been, ooh, caught in a trap by the expert.
Mm.
It's more satisfying if he sits there and goes, it's all very well saying that this system's corrupt, but am I going to be the one to change it, or am I going to sit on my beach with my just-out-of-hospital girlfriend?
Yeah, okay. Just quickly back to the nanofleck of radioactive material.
Right, yeah.
It's kind of... That's messing me up a little bit, because...
Right.
A... It means that the web's much wider than we initially thought, and it's not as narrow vision as the killer, the assassin,
mm-hmm.
has had. So it means that someone else is involved that's now also trying to clear up loose ends for...
No, it's the expert. It's the expert with the bottle. This whole takes within 24 hours, so he's had the particle.
But what I'm saying is she's not going to put a nano fleck of radioactive shit in her own bottle, and then he's not going to drink from it, knowing that he did that, right? So someone else has to be involved.
No, I think she does, because I think she knows she's done. She's an expert. She knows him better than he knows himself.
So you're saying that she puts it in there herself just to trip him up?
Yeah.
God damn.
Because he calls her the expert.
Bro.
So she is leagues above what he's able to do. She is higher than his level.
Right. She's the Spielberg.
Yeah, she's the Spielberg. He's David Fincher.
All right, this is fucking me up a little bit.
Yeah, now you got to rewatch it again for the sixth time. Enjoy that.
Thanks.
Did you spot the Nine Inch Nails reference?
Is it when Trent Reznor and Atticus Ross did the soundtrack?
Yeah, well done, bud.
Yeah,
nice.
I nailed it, man.
No.
Yeah, it was subtle, but I found it.
Yeah. but also, 57 minutes in, the killer takes a nail gun.
He does.
He quotes, 3 9-gauge nails.
But you're going to have to fill in the gaps here, man. You're going to have to fill in the gaps. Like
9-gauge nails? Come on.
Oh, 9-gauge nails. Okay. I thought this was like a specific lyric or something that I'm missing, and I'm like, I don't care that much.
No, it's just 9-gauge nails.
I like it. That's good.
Come on.
That's good.
Come
on. No, that is good. Oh, I like that.
All right. Fine. Yeah. Fine. Do you want to play a game?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not sure if you're going to enjoy this one.
Hit me with it. I don't want to brag, mate. I've been studying this film. I'm pretty much an expert in everything that this film represents.
Oh, you know all of it.
Yeah, I'm in. I'm all.
You've seen this 5 times.
I've seen it more. You know what I mean?
Right.
I'm playing it cool.
So you know that throughout the film, he uses a variety of fake identities.
Obviously. Elementary school stuff, my dear boy.
And that every single one of those fake identities is the name of a character from a television show.
Yeah. Yeah, obviously.
So Felix Unger, for instance.
Felix Unger, yeah.
Yeah, is from which show?
Inspector Morse.
Yes. It's The Odd Couple.
No.
These are all 1970s.
Yeah, yeah, no, this is what I'm thinking.
One from 1982.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. It's all 1970. Inspector Morse, season 2, episode 3. Unger is the killer.
Okay, what about Archibald Bunker?
Ah, that's Walking with Dinosaurs, classic 1970s TV. Yeah.
I love the idea that there's just like a Diplodocus called Archibald Bunker.
That's exactly what it is. Have you seen it too, right?
Yeah, sick. Yeah, yeah. Okay, so Oscar Madison.
Yeah.
He was in the same show that Felix Unger was.
He was.
So we're just going to say...
Emmerdale.
Inspector Morse.
Oh, yeah, Inspector Morse. That was what I said.
Inspector Morse, yeah. Not the Odd Couple.
No.
Not the Odd Couple.
No, that would be too... That is an odd couple. You know what I mean?
Right, okay. so Felix Unger is a character in Emmerdale and Inspector Morse. So it's a crossover.
Yeah. It's a crossover episode.
It's a crossover episode. Yeah. All right,
Unger's the killer, and then Theodore Muscle Rat. What was his name?
Theodore Muscle Rat was not it.
No.
What about Howard Cunningham?
Howard Cunningham. This is an interesting one. So Howard Cunningham, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was...
Monday, Tuesday.
Was in The Bill, which is a very, very well-respected British TV show that is almost a documentary of the life inside a police station.
So you know when I went Monday, Tuesday, you were hearing...
The Bill.
Monday, Tuesday, it's The Bill.
Yes.
Thursday, Friday, it's the bill.
See, you have seen this, dude. I'm telling you. I'm so good at this game.
Well, I'll give you three more because there's nine and I can sense where
we're
going.
Give me all nine. I'll get them all right.
You just need to say, this is a very easy one.
Mm-hmm. Heartbeat.
Lou Grant. Where's Lou Grant from? Just say his name.
Lou Grant.
Yeah, there you go. He's from the 1977 show Lou Grant. Well done, buddy.
Nailed it. See what I mean?
Nailed it. Right, you know
expert
this.
Expert in my field.
There we go. Now concentrate on the surname here.
I'm listening.
From what 1970s American show might George Jefferson be from?
Dukes of Hazzard. Easy. he plays the car in season 2. I believe it's a Dodge.
Right, okay. He's a brilliant actor.
Fantastic. On all fours all that time.
I know.
Many men inside him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Everyone looks at that show like it's a family favourite, but Jesus Christ, Nana, calm down. That car is a man and has four people inside him right now.
Well, I think we're going to say 10 out of 10, bud. I think you nailed that.
See, when people said to me, what? You've not had a TV since you were 17 and now you're in your mid-30s. And I was like, yeah, but I already know TV. I've completed it.
Have you not had a TV since you were 17, Ben?
No. I find the idea of paying to watch the BBC and like vulgar.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I have streaming services. There's consoles and stuff knocking about that you can literally just knock on Amazon Prime, which costs me £8 a month. Netflix is what, 13 now?
Mm-hmm.
Then you've got Hulu. Then you've got all this other bullshit. Studio Canal Plus, that's one that I signed up for when we were sponsored by them.
Yeah.
Forgot to cancel that until right now. That's £8 a month.
You can just click, you've got a TV license. They literally can't. You say...
This is crime. This is crime, Rob. You're telling people to crime right now, and I'm not comfortable with it, all right?
Yes.
Don't crime, okay?
All right, sorry. So how are you going to rate David Fincher's The Killer, a film about crime? Were you watching it going, I bet this f***er's not even paid his TV license.
I was fuming about it, to be honest, but then he didn't watch TV once, so I was fine with it. You know what I mean?
All right, okay.
Yeah.
Are you like, I bet he's not even rented this WeWork.
Yeah, I bet he didn't. That's the issue.
I bet he didn't,
But in my mind, Hodges took care of it. You know what I mean? The producer took care of all the expenses so the director could cook in the kitchen. I got it all down, mate. No crime in this film. The only crime in this film is that the target didn't get his last lap dance.
Yeah, that's a sadness.
It's upsetting. That's upsetting.
I, to be honest, it was one of the things I was looking forward to seeing more of.
You know what I mean?
And I'm like, oh, Fincher doesn't really understand his audience.
Let's follow a mopey old man around. No, tits. Come on, Fincher. if anyone's a true Fincher fan, it's what he's known for, right? This is an aggressive 7.5, bud. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I really like the way... Actually, no. It's an 8.5. It's an 8.5 because I did thoroughly enjoy it. I love the way it's written. Your take on it has made me like it more because you've took a wildly different route to me and it all makes perfect sense, as does mine. And now the deja vu knocked it up half a point to take it to 8.5. You know what I mean? Because I feel like I've lived it twice.
I'm gonna go with a 6.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
On the Fincher finale?
Yeah.
On the Fincher finale, you've got one toe over the fence on a 6.
Yeah. And I'll tell you for why now, all right?
Tell me for why, immediately.
I do think it's unfair that we ask directors to keep raising the bar as much as they have in the past.
Mm.
I do understand that Fincher is in his kind of happy time at the moment. He's going, do you know what? Netflix will give me 10 million, 25 million per feature, and I'll make something that's interesting to me. And I'm glad he's doing that. He's earned it. He's made some of the best films... Some of the best films of the last few decades have got his name on them, and he has pushed the art form forward just immeasurably. And I think throughout the course of our episodes, there have been so many landmark moments where we're like, this is just a perfect film. It's a fat 10. There's so many fat 10s in his catalogue.
Yeah.
This one, I don't... Where with Mank, it was really different from what he was normally doing.
Yeah, he conquered 1930s Hollywood in 2020s. Right. You know what I mean?
This is a bit of a retread of so much of his prior catalogue. Mm-hmm. But by saying it twice, it kind of loses its sparkle.
Okay.
And I feel like it says... it's like Fight Club. It's the anti-Fight Club. It's... Don't fight against the system because there's no point, because you don't want that. You just want things to be easy.
Ooh.
And the easy thing is to just keep going. Okay. This is project silence. This is project be quiet. Yeah. Keep your head down and just let others deal with
project
it.
Project feet up instead of project mayhem, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I got you.
And that's interesting as a thing. Yeah. But for 2 hours, I was a little like, and it felt a little and then. I wasn't quite invested.
Oh, you got some and then from it.
I didn't like him. I thought I just.
That's interesting.
He was, I couldn't relate to him as a character.
I didn't like him either. But I also thought at some points he might be a surrogate for every single person that's living and breathing and just going through the motions.
100%.
You know what I mean?
And he 100% is, and that's fascinating. Yeah. I bring these films up all the time, but Buffalo Soldiers with Joaquin Phoenix, or Jarhead with Jake Gyllenhaal, which are films about troop deployments that are boring. Yeah. And they do their job fantastically by evoking that feeling of boredom, which as a film, you go, wow, they really accurately captured how boring it must have been on those bases.
Ooh, yeah.
It was a slog.
Yeah.
This is a cold, emotionless, ugly film about mass consumerism. And its takeaway is, don't bother. Just go with the motions. Yeah. Now, that's a fantastically brave and fun and, like, subversive thing to say, but it's not all that much fun to watch.
I got you, man. I've got a different takeaway from it. I'm going to save it for my Monday motivation, but I've got a little takeaway from it.
Okay, good. Because we are sorely out of time.
We are. Guys.
Just before we wrap the show up, if you enjoyed this episode and you want to support the show, you can leave us a review and tell a friend about us. It honestly, if you, helps more than you know. If
it
you
really
share
does.
Stuff, stories, if you comment on our stuff, if you find us on socials and just push out to your network, incredible.
Just use your powerful mouths. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Use your powerful mouths. You can support us over on Patreon for as little as £1 a month. Guys, thank you so much for hanging out with us this week. It has been an absolute pleasure. We love and appreciate each and every one of you more than you will ever know. Special shout out to all of our Patreons for supporting us continuously. We love you unconditionally. There are conditions you're giving us money, but we do love you. It's fine.
do you know what? I think the thing I love more, and hi Patreon, because I'm going to cut this out in the main episode. Yeah. The thing I love most about the Patreon listeners, right, is... when we have these chats, like this episode, we've had some episodes that are so deeply researched that are like fragile little eggs of frozen ice that have to be like
Fabergé eggs, if you will.
Fabergé
eggs.
Nailed it. Yeah. They're very delicate. And then there's this ones where we just come on, you've got a theory, I've got a theory, we shoot the breeze. And there's a bit of me that's just going, oh, is this, I don't care, because Patreon. And I'm just going, there's people there who have got time for this, and it feels just so much better.
Dude.
It feels so much better to not be worrying and just go in.
Do you know how much more relaxed these episodes are when we get to have a laugh and a giggle and just go, fuck it. Do you know why? Because just because. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of it. Yeah. That's the end of it.
Whereas before it was like, oh, maybe there's too many, is it too facty? It's not funny enough. Maybe there's not enough insight.
It needs to be 33% insight and 33% fact, 33% fun. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
we had a fucking formula for that shit. That's not a joke. All right.
Yeah, it was a fine thing to aim for, but impossible.
Yeah. This episode, our pre-prod, 3 lines. Need you to know that, Patreon. Yeah. All right. 3 lines of shit. That's it. That's all this came from. Salamanders. You know what I'm saying? I couldn't put that in previous shows.
No, that's coming out of the RSS as well. That's hideously offensive.
We love each and every one of you more than you will ever know. Thank you so much for hanging out with us.
pineapple, just quickly, you need to do that again with more energy because for the RSS people, it's going to be really weird. You talking up here? And they go,
oh, yeah, yeah.
We love
sorry.
Each
other. It was supposed to be heartfelt. By Patreon. You know what I mean? It wasn't like deflated or anything, but I'll, hold on, just yeah, let yeah. me fucking get my acting on one sec.
Bye, Patreon.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us, guys. It's been an absolute pleasure. We love you.
We really, really do. And thank you for spending an hour of your week with us, especially at the start. Mm. We know a lot of you listen on a Monday.
Yeah.
Ben is going to give you a little Monday motivational pep talk to drive you through this week.
I am.
While I just tell you to do what the world, society, and especially David Fincher's 2023 film, The Killer, tell you to do.
I'm going to slightly disagree with your last points about the film, because I think what this film does is it teaches all of us a valuable lesson now. I'm dealing with a little bit of ego death at the minute, you know what I mean? Learning to accept who I am, really am, on all this stuff. And I think the main lesson to take away from this film is you're not important. No one gives a shit. Do you know what I mean? You're not changing anything. The system ain't going to fucking crumble because you ain't doing your bit. Shut up and get on with it. That's the message, right? But here's the good thing about that. Look at how exciting that prospect is. You can fuck around and do anything and everything, and it doesn't matter because no one cares.